This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And let me ask you something. Here's a question. Will the U.S. Consumer Sentiment Index beat 70, be above it, exceed it, in April of 2025? At Interactive Brokers, the yes contract was recently priced at 29%, and the no was at 69%. IBKR Forecast Trader lets you use exchange-listed forecast contracts to trade your opinion on yes or no questions on future events, like, for example, climate change, or even the economy or politics. You choose yes or no. And if you're right, you get paid. It's that simple. Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader contracts are commission-free, and you earn a dollar for every correct prediction. Plus, you'll earn 3.83% APY on your investment with an interest-like incentive coupon, and you'll get $3 when you start trading forecast contracts. Please note that forecast contracts are not suitable for all investors. Listen, check out the data, spot the trends, and make your prediction, because the best-informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Go to ibkr.com/forecast and start predicting today.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We have retaliatory tariffs on the retaliatory tariffs. Where does it end? Eat your vegetables, people. That's what they're telling us before you can get any dessert. The put-call ratio was 1.6% on Friday. In early morning trading, the VIX hits 45. Oil at a three-year low. Oh, it's exhausting. Our guest, well, maybe it's perfect timing for an Uber bear. Tim Knight, founder of Slope of Hope, is on this week with us. All this and much more on episode number 915 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Oh, we have tariffs. We have retaliatory tariffs. We have retaliatory on the retaliatory on the upside. Let's talk about this, shall we? Because it's confusing. It's been tough sledding out there. I mean, stocks are getting rocked. Like, seriously. I'm not just saying, oh, it's a bad day. I mean, like, really bad. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm usually pretty cool, focused, right? That's me, Andrew Horowitz. You hear me every week talking about not letting your emotions get in the way of what's going on from a aspect of investing. But I got to tell you something. I try to keep my head straight most of these chaotic times and all, but just for a moment on Friday, I was like hot. I was hot. I was like kind of tingly. I was like in those, like, you know, I was breathing a little heavy. I'm like, uh-oh, turn the fan on. Let's get some cool air in here, because I don't know what's going on, but I'm feeling a little weird. What was it about? Well, I mean, I was hot. The markets were pissed, right? China came back with the retaliatory tariffs at about 6:30 in the morning on Friday morning, hitting us back with 34% on anything that comes through the door. And then you got, of course, all the things that happened with regard to the commentary about this was a mistake and it's not going to be good. I'm going to hold my ground and the U.S. is not going to be pushed around, et cetera, et cetera. But then we also saw late in the morning, after a huge drawdown in the markets on Friday in particular, which was almost worse than it was on Thursday. We saw Vietnam supposedly reach out to cut tariffs to zero. Cambodia was also talking about the same immediately, right on cue. Once that happened, the stocks that were most affected, and this is the point about this, we've got to be careful to take the idea that these tariffs are going to be maybe temporary, maybe not, a negotiation tactic or not. I don't know what the answer is, but we can't get spooked out of quality names that may have some benefit. For example, as soon as the news came out about Vietnam and about Cambodia, what's the importance there? What do we have that we want to look at there? I want to look at those companies that are really doing a lot of production in that area that we're going to have a problem with. Where are they? What are they? Well, companies like Nike, Crocs, On, you know, the footwear company. So there's three footwear companies, right? Wayfair. I mean, total turnaround. Wayfair was halted on the ramp up. as most have a lot to gain if, in fact, just that, just there, just those two countries change their tariffs levels, and we, in response, do the same for them. Big deal. Now, the problem is there's so many countries. I have the list right here. It's two pages. Country after country. Peru, 10%. Nicaragua is going to be 18%. Costa Rica is going to be 10%. Madagascar, whatever we get from them, I don't know, 47%, because they have a 93% supposed tariff that's charged to the U.S. But if you look at the fine print of this, I don't exactly know what they're trying to get at here, but it's a tariff charged to the U.S., including currency manipulation and trade barriers. I don't know how you quantify those numbers. I'm not quite sure. Serbia at 74%. Laos, 95%. That's another big one. Let's see if I find the big ones. Vietnam, 90%. Thailand, 72%. Let's see if I can find Cambodia. Cambodia, 97%. So we threw back a 49% on Cambodia. Vietnam, 46%. And that's a problem when you have these low-cost manufacturers making things like Nike shoes or Crocs or even cheap furniture like for Wayfair. And we're getting it back here. And all of a sudden, we're going to be putting on another 45% extra tariff. Yes, it's going to be inflationary. In fact, on Friday, it was very clear when Powell was speaking, Fed Chair Powell on Friday, that he was talking about an important issue. He was talking about how he thought that the tariffs were going to be inflationary. And then all of a sudden, recognizing that that may be something we need to look at and hold off on. Don't do anything yet with that. Nike, Crocs, moved pretty hard. As a matter of fact, if you look at where they were to start the day and finish, I mean, by midday, Crocs was in the green. Shark Ninja, SN, was down, 10, 12%, kind of flat by midday. Kind of moved up from there. The VIX moved down a little bit. Oan was up 4% or so. Let's see what else I have here. Do I have Nike on here on my list that I'm looking at? Point is, here's Crocs. Crocs, 2.5%. Point is that we saw Vietnam, the VNM, right? That's the Vietnam ETF, move up very dramatically as well. These issues that we're going to have to deal with on this are going to be something that is very important. I want to talk about a little bit about some of the interesting facts we have also, what's going on with yields, the VIX, and really how off we are in the markets right now. That's something I think we have to look at and why, in fact, rates are moving lower. I mean, we clipped 4% on the 10-year on Friday. It came back up a little bit. The banks, see what's going on there? The banks getting smoked. And I think that's something that we really need to focus in on. So let's start with where we are and what has happened so far this year. And then we can go through this. All right, deep breath. VIX. It's 45. It hit a 45 on Friday morning, early morning, before the actual trading and all that. But you get the VIX indications. 45. The inversion between the VIX on the short and long term, right? So you look at the short term layer on the VIX and then the longer term, the expectations out. The highest inversion we've seen since COVID, which is pretty amazing. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 8 or 9% since its high. The S&P 500 down about 12%. The Qs, the NASDAQ 100, down about 20% from their highs. Actually, some is a little bit more, but bottom line is they're all negative for the year now. Yields, the 10-year's ripping. I mean, absolutely ripping. On pace to be an incredible move, one of the biggest we've seen in a long time that we're seeing because, there's something else going on, right? With what we're seeing is that the yields are starting to come down because there's a safety trade going on. People are going towards bonds. They want to buy that, which is good if you hold bonds. Thank goodness for bonds as a buffer in an asset allocation. But one of the problems you have here is with the major carnage over the last week, Friday, and some of the worst with the major banks selling off big time, like 8 to 10%, just on Friday with Bank of America and Goldman Sachs, and you see all the big names that are really getting hit, like JP Morgan. That's not to do with tariffs necessarily. I mean, you're not going to say that JP Morgan's products are tariffed at X amount by going into China or into Vietnam or Kazakhstan or Poland. No, not at all. What you're seeing here is the repricing in of something. What is it? Well, it's the potential for a recession. That's what's being priced in to the price of the banks right now. So when we talk about rates, Briefing had a great little piece out at the end of the week, and they said, first off, I'm quoting them, first off, seeing that the Fed funds futures have quickly gone from one rate cut to five rate cuts over the next 12 months is not bullish. The simple reason is that the manifestation of awareness that our present course heads through a sharp recession is nothing if nothing changes about the tariff policy moves. And just the same, a very dovish Powell will not be bullish in this case for the same reason. Look at the chart of prior rate cut cycles and coincide that with recessions, and you'll see that the bear market coincides with the rate cut period for the most part. And ahead of Powell's discussion, they were talking about how anything that Powell said was really probably not a major game changer. And what we have here and the focus that we have right now with all this is on the fact that yields are coming down, but for the wrong reasons. The yields coming down that we hope would be the case and everybody was banking on was that inflation would be under control and Powell wouldn't have to raise rates and we'd have all of this. The problem is that he's stuck. The Fed is literally between a rock and a hard place. The fact that they have interest rates that are at the level they have right now, that are lower, it's again, not because of inflation subsiding, but because people running for cover and looking for opportunities that are more safe, the safety trade. That's what we said, right? Okay. But then you have on top of that, the situation that they think, and Powell said on Friday that he thinks that the inflationary trend that we're seeing is going to stick and tariffs are not helping it. He didn't say stick. He didn't really say it was absolute because Powell would never do that. But when you heard and read all the commentary that he made with regard to where they stand right now in the Fed and what they're seeing, you know, he thinks that the current level of tariff is much greater of a concern, much greater of a concern than it was before. Because they banked and plotted in and estimated based on certain set of criteria that is no longer the case. So what we have now is a Fed that is stuck, confused, unable to actually do something. Because if they actually lower rates, it's going to create even more potential for inflation potential. But we have President Trump coming out and saying, you know what, we need to have lower rates. I'm just saying it's a confusing time. Uncertainty reigns. And that's why we're seeing a VIX in the 40s. we're seeing the markets get just blown out, especially into a weekend. And even though there was some whisper of good news that maybe there is actually a negotiation going to happen, it was temporary, brief, and momentary for markets. We go around in circles on that, but let's just get to our guest. And our guest today is Tim Knight. He's been charting and trading since 1987. And his first, stock trade was, in fact, in October 19th, to be exact, of 1987, the day of the dreaded crash, which perhaps goes a long way to explaining why his disposition towards bearishness is something we've talked about on this show many times. And he's been involved in personal computers and doing all sorts of things since the late 70s. He started at age 16, beginning with writing a couple dozen books over the time using programming, using computers and programming them. And his most recent writing has been focused on charting and the history of financial markets, including his newest book. Your newest book is it Solid State or is it Prosperity and Progress?
My first novel, yeah.
Yes, first novel, right. Your first novel, right. So he also writes The Slope of Hope. We'll get right back to you. And he also hosts The Daily Show on Tasty Live Network, Trading Charts with Tim Knight. Now, Tim, the last time you were on was October of 2024, just a few months ago, five, 6 months ago, and things started to look a little different than they were over the last couple of years. And I promised you that one day, at one time frame, maybe not on the day, but in the vicinity, there will be a time when you come on the show that there's going to be a market correction, even though I have forced your hand many times to come on the show during a bull market.
I know. No, I mean, in the past, I've been a total brat about it because, like, I don't want to talk. And, you know, and so this time it's like, Tim, look, we've only got 8 hours. Like, oh, can we have any more? So, yeah, you got me once in a blue moon. You're going to get me in a good mood. So this is the day.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about a few things. I'm going to do some warm-up questions for you and help explain some things to our listeners who, you know, most people have a proclivity to be maybe not, you know, all excited and positive all the time, but in investing have a proclivity to be, well, the, you know, someday, one day things are going to get better. They can be good now, but they'll be, you know, even better in the future. Nobody really wants things to be bad. I mean, that's, you know, that's just not what people want.
I've got to interrupt you there because, when my beloved son was like 4 years old or something, I was trying to explain to him, like, you know, bearishness and like, that's my nature and all this. And like, he was four and he honestly says something like, why would you do that since things always go up?
Yeah.
Like, okay, go. From the mouths of babes. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
So what does it mean to be an Uber bear or just to be a jet? You know, I don't want to really pigeonhole that, but what does it mean to be just on the bearish side and what do you do?
I've spent most of my life trying to figure that out. I don't know if I was dropped in my head or what, but basically I think that it suggests an inclination toward, well, put it to you this way, going back to me being a father. When we become parents, you know, we've had no training really. And it's we don't know what kind of parents we'll be. What I found about myself was that I was really good at walking to a room, be it our own house or a friend's house, and instantly seeing the things that could go wrong. Like there's a glass table and there's a corner over there and there's an electric socket, et cetera. I think some of us are just wired to like see things that are going to go bad. And I wouldn't even call it pessimism. You know, I've built several businesses on my own. You cannot build a business and be a pessimist. It's impossible. But I am kind of always looking for what's going to go bad, what's going to break. And so for that unfortunate reason, I am kind of wired this way. I'm also a chartist to the core, and I just find for myself it's a lot easier to look for tops and reversals and plunges and all that good stuff as opposed to liftoff. But, you know, we live in an inflationary world. Mercifully, most of my wealth is just like in real estate and stuff like that that I can't hastily just dump. So I'm not roaming the streets doing this podcast right now, but... that is kind of,
wait, you're not podcasting from your car?
Close, but, but in any case, that's the best excuse I can offer. You know, being a bear has never made anybody rich. Indeed in this everything bubble we've been through, the handful of famous bears, they've all thrown in the towel.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Yeah. There's no big hedge funds left.
I would say that there's a, if you could do it, right? It's like anything else. If you could do this, if you have a little bit on either side or have the ability to have at least, this is my opinion, I'm not judging, that's not it, but saying from an investment, if you want to be bearish, but you have to also try your best to go on the other side sometimes.
Right.
Which is tough.
Well, that, you know, I'm a big fan of ratio charts, which is basically A divided by B. And one that I've touted for months and months and months is basically stocks divided by gold. And you could put anything there. It could be stocks, but by silver, anything. And what that chart has told us loudly is be bearish equities and be bullish precious metals. And so I've at least been able to embrace one thing, precious metals, which you know, today notwithstanding, has done really well. And still has the stench of bearishness on it, because you can be a big metals guy and still be a complete pain in the ass at cocktail parties. So like, oh, yeah. Things doom and gloom.
I was at a lunch last week and there was a gold bug at the table. I mean, like a coin gold bug, that kind of level, you know what I'm saying? And you know, they were just giving me all sorts of reasons and rationale and excuses. I mean, going back to like the Civil War, then Roman times, then I mean, just like what? You know, and it didn't matter. And it always goes up. And everybody's like, well, what about this or that? No. And, you know, that's fine. That's good.
Precious metal guys are weird, but I love them. It's sort of like that strange uncle at Thanksgiving that you want to chat with. Apologies to any of the crypto bros out there. I would vastly rather sit next to a gold bug than a crypto bro, because there's no religion or political view on the planet that rivals the zeal that the crypto crowd has. So I've learned just to keep my fat mouth shut.
Listen, if you go back in time though, and give yourself one piece of trading advice, what would that? What would it, you know? What would you say to yourself?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, let's be fair. If we're dealing with what we've lived through, if I could go back to my young self, it'd be like, for the love of your personal savior, Jesus Christ, buy anything with a ticker symbol and do not sell it until early 2025. I mean, because obviously there's very little you could have bought in the past. You know, I've been trading since 87, as you said, that hasn't eventually gone up. Now, if you told me like, you know, you don't know the era you're going to be in, you know, it would be harder to say, but, you know, any look at a chart from when I, you know, had any money at all to now has been basically a bottle rocket. And so more broadly, you know, what I've done, I'll try to give a better answer to your question. On my website, I've put together 10 trading rules. I've really worked hard to try to make them decent. And I think I'll just share one of them. One of the key rules I would say is let your emotions be your contraindicator. So when you're scared and down on yourself and you think, why did I ever trade anything in my life, and you hate everything, that's when you should basically go with whatever trades you think make sense. And when you're like, you know, woohoo, I'm a genius and this is easy, that's when you should get out of every single thing. Because, you know, I've been through that hundreds of times, and even just yesterday, and we're recording this the day after the Liberation Day announcement. Even just yesterday, I was really feeling sour, and I was starting to say things I hadn't said in months. You know, like, oh, I hate this market, and I'm no good. And I boiled it down like 50% cash. I got quite light, and of course, that's when the floor gave way. So, yeah, that's the advice I would give. You know, use your own emotions as a contraindicator as to what's about to happen.
Yeah. So continuing on some of these warm-ups, if you weren't involved in trading, what career path do you think you would have pursued?
Well, I mean, I live in the Silicon Valley, and I started into computers very, very early. When I was 16 years old, I wrote my first published book about computers, and it was called The World Connection. And this kind of grinds in the irony of me never going long anything. You know, in 1982, I basically said that computers talking to one another was going to change the world. And I talked about email, I talked about shopping, I talked about dating, all the rest of it. And, you know, that was a little ahead of its time, because like it was 10 years before the internet was even a little bit of a thing for the hardcore hobbyist crowd. So, I mean, I'm not an engineer. I don't have the brain for one. But maybe I would have gone into like product management and high tech or something like that. Mm. That's the only thing I can guess.
Yeah. And let's skip over to the hot topic and these tariffs, which I have a list in front of me of the absurd levels of what other companies are potentially charging us. Now, remember, they put out this on the President of the United States website, White House website, whatever. They put out all the tariffs they're going to be charging. Nice little chart. And it says tariffs charged to the USA, and then USA discounted, whatever that means, reciprocal tariffs. So, for example, minimum of 10% on every country. And then if there is a tariff, they're going to tack on more to that country, at least 50% of what that is. So in the tariffs charged to the US, there's a little sign, there's a little note that says, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. So I don't know how you somehow quantify that.
That's out of my pay grade. I mean, honestly, as even though I'm like wading through this stuff day after day after day, you know, when we came into the announcement yesterday, I had no idea, you know, were there numbers in place? Was there a draft in place? Was there any idea what it's going to be? Was it rock solid and he was just there to kind of formalize it? You know, it's sort of like when Powell does his press conference, the information's all out. And, you know, so he's got nothing to add to it. It's just kind of a Q&A session. And so I came into that event very ignorant about, like, what, with all the back and forth, was there anything solid? And I was, you know, so I do find it amusing. You probably saw that there are some countries with very heavy tariffs that have no humans on them. Just
yeah, Madagascar.
In any case, I was watching, you know, not even that nervously, because I thought it was all kind of old news now when this thing was going on. And, the ES was like 40 or something. And then suddenly it was up almost 100. And my stomach sank a bit. And like, oh, I guess I really didn't understand what this was all about. And I sort of like kind of meandered around a little bit sad. And then I glanced at the screen again. It's like blood red. It's like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
So I've been trading for decades. This has got to be in the like top three weirdest events I've ever seen.
This is definitely weird. I mean, we have things like Serbia. They supposedly charge US 70. I don't know, what do we buy from Serbia, but 74%. What do we sell to Serbia too? I don't even know. I mean, I'm not sure,
right.
But 37% is a tariff we're going to put on. And Laos charges 95% tariffs on US goods, and we're going to charge them 48. Now, here's my point of all this. Is this potentially, from all that we've seen recently, just the snapshot of where we are here and now, right? We don't know what's going to happen next week. We don't freaking know what's going to happen tomorrow. But is this, some are calling, economic Armageddon?
Well, you know, we're dealing with a lot of moving parts here. And we're dealing with a man with a complex personality, let's say. And, you know, there will come points in time when just the sheer pressure of the financial losses, you know, because at first it's going to be what we're seeing now, which is, you know, it's kind of like the seven stages of denial kind of thing, or seven stages after death. So at this point, it's just like, it's, you know, this isn't us, and we inherited this, and there's going to be a little pain for a while, et cetera. So there's a certain amount of placation that's going on, and there'll be plenty of blame, you know, Biden, 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 Biden the whole way through. But there will come a point when it's like, look, you know, the market's down 22%, and then they will start pulling tricks out of their bag. And I actually tweeted yesterday, and I believe this, and I'm sorry to say it's true. I think before this year ends, they're going to try to ban short selling, just like they did on October. Based on no data and no information. This is just conjecture on my part. But I was mentioning, like, this is one of the top three weirdest. Definitely in the top three was the day I was at Profit, my old company. And I don't even have to look at the data. September 19, 2008. And the news came out before the opening bell that here are the 400 plus stocks. They were all financially related that are illegal to short. And so the market like blasted higher for like a minute. And then all holy hell broke loose.
Yep.
And so as a raving lunatic bear, in a twisted way, I'm kind of looking forward to that day, because he's going to throw it out there and they're going to gobble it up, and then there's going to be vomit all over the place. So, I'm pretty sure that once they're out of blame, once they're out of, you know, don't worry your sweet little heads, it's just like, you know, you might have seen Trevor Milton got a pardon. And with Trevor Milton, did he say, you know, he's a good Mormon and all that, like, you know, I've you know, reflected on this with my Heavenly Father and with God, and I've sinned and I'll never sin again. No, he blamed the short sellers.
Yeah.
He blamed the short sellers, for the love of God. And it's like, this is since the beginning of mankind. I mean, Adam and Eve, they probably found a way to blame short sellers for getting kicked out of Eden. It's always us. So, yeah.
One of the things that's interesting in this whole wacky world of investing is that we have narratives, right? We have this narrative machine, frankly, that's, you know, running things, right? Oh, it's not so bad. It's going to be good. This, eat your, you know, the phrases like, oh, we need to eat our vegetables before I get our dessert, and that's what's going to happen. There'll be some pain before there's some gain, and, you know, on and on and on and on, right? And there's some people who are always looking to the half is the cup is half full, as you do, as you've told me you do. I'm not telling you that, you've told me that. And then some, you know, the cup is half empty, you say, and then half full. Well, interesting note this week, a bullish note that came out regarding, actually more than interesting, fascinating rationalization of what's going on from an Uber bull, which I'm going to tell you about. Before we do that, though, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get right back with our guest, Tim Knight. We're going to take a moment. We're going to talk about interactive brokers again, because I don't want you to be fooled by, quote, zero commissions on crypto trades, because some brokers add a spread to that price you pay. But at Interactive Brokers, there are no hidden spreads, and you'll pay much less than you would at Gemini, Robinhood, or even Fidelity. Keep more in your pocket and trade crypto for less coin at Interactive Brokers. See what I did there? Trading cryptocurrencies involves risk and is only for individuals with high risk tolerance and the financial ability to sustain losses. Compare other brokers' fees and see how much you could save at ibkr.com/crypto. All right, we're back with Tim Knight from the Slope of Hope and host of a great show on Tasty Live Network, Trading Charts with Tim Knight. Tim has been a guest for many years. So we left off, Tim, we left off on this idea that there's rationalizations, right? And we do our best to find it. Well, listen to this. Tell me what you think. This bullish note out this week from Dan Ives. You know Dan Ives?
I've heard the name, but I couldn't say a thing about him. No idea.
He is your upside down. He's your antithesis. He's your polar opposite, or maybe even your foil, I guess. I don't know. Okay? This is what this is.
My nemesis. All right.
He's basically said that this, meaning the tariffs announced recently, can't be happening because it would be economic Armageddon for the world. Hence, therefore, it is not happening. Somehow, some way, this must be a bold first step in gaining negotiation leverage for a coming deal-making process. How do you like that?
Well, I am instantly reminded of something I experienced myself. And so, yeah, I think the best way to answer it is just to just a quick anecdote. Because, you know, I'm on Twitter. I've been on Twitter for eons. And I sent out a tweet, which was basically commenting on the fact that Trump, he said, and I'm quoting here, the quote was, an old-fashioned term that we use, groceries. I used it on the campaign. It's such an old-fashioned term, but a beautiful term, groceries. It says a bag with different things in it. So that was the quote. And so I sent that quote and I put, his mind is truly on a level that few can comprehend. And what happened in response to that was this guy wrote back, he replied, exactly, 3D chess and controls the board. Not many understand he's saving us from a welfare state. It's like, Jiminy Cricket, so you think I'm serious. Okay, I know I'm dealing with it at this point. So that's the thing. If you're dealing with someone, not to suggest Mr. Ives is of that caliber of reduced cranial capacity, but if you're dealing with somebody who, like, is that blinkered, I just kind of walk the other way.
Yeah, you've seen him, by the way. Dan Ives, he's a little bit of a well-nourished fellow very, very flamboyant sports coats and attire.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I see him now. Good heavens. Oh, good Lord. I thought I dressed badly. A little bit thirsty, I would say, for attention.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say this guy is really my opposite. Plus I've got magnificent hair. Yeah, so, Okay. Well, now I know who's on the other side of my trades.
All right. And then the other thing on tariffs out this week, another piece that came out, the Tax Foundation says that the tariffs will reduce after-tax income by an average of 2.1% and amount to an average tax increase of more than $2,100 per U.S. household in 2025. We'll raise $1.8 trillion in revenue over the next decade and shrink U.S. GDP by 0.5%. I've had a lot of arguments with people about the tariffs. I am not a tariff guy. And now we've been all tariffs all the time, which is good because we switched over from CNBC only talking about what the Fed is going to do every single guest that comes on to at least something different. But now they're totally, they've gone a total different direction, but done the same thing, just substituted the idea of tariffs for what the Fed's going to do. Let's just end this discussion on this. Is this what you think from what you've seen and maybe what you know or whatever? Is it as bad as some people are saying, or is it maybe not even a big deal?
Well, you know, I have no answer except for this. My sort of core existence as a chartist is the belief that all that information is already built into the chart, because I don't pretend to be an economist. I don't pretend to know all those answers. I will say that I think one would be hard pressed to show me any government projection that has ever, ever, ever come close to the truth. It's all very rose-colored glasses. And so with respect to like the tariffs and their effect and their economic effect and so forth, just as a super macro 90,000 foot view, all I can say is that this is all playing out beautifully with what I've believed will be unfolding like right now and, you know, into next year and so forth. So it's kind of like the movie that I thought it was going to be, but I have no specific answer to the question.
Well, how will you know when it's the end of this, right? Because we know that markets move up slowly and down quickly, right? It's what I say is Rome wasn't built in a day, but Hiroshima was destroyed in a matter of minutes. And right. We're seeing the first glancing blow, or maybe not the first, I mean, there was some other things mm-hmm. going on, but of a real underscore of people saying, oh my, that's a problem. When you see markets right. that are getting hit at the level they are, when you see something like a 1 day, a Apple down 10%, not on an earnings announcement, by the way, and you see, countries like Vietnam, you look at the Vietnam ETF down 12% because their tariff went from, let's see, I'll take out my handy dandy cheat sheet here on this. Vietnam went to 46%. One of the highest on this list. Cambodia, 49%. They can't afford that, obviously.
Yeah.
So when do we know the coast is clear, or when do we know when we should just, how do we know?
Right. No, I think there'll be a lot of anecdotal things happening. I mean, and I'm not trying to be cute about this. Like one thing I'll be looking for is like when I'm suddenly really popular, you know? So like, and I've seen this in my own life because like, when the COVID crash hit, things like that, people just clamor to my site, throw me their credit cards, sign up left, right, and sideways. And the thing which has been comforting about this nascent bear market is that I'm not popular at all. And, you know, I keep a close eye on my subscription chart, and it's basically just growing very, very slowly. And, it's kind of like the VIX in a way. And so when big media asks me for an interview, or like, I can't believe all the business I'm getting in my own personal life, that's going to be a little data point. Another data point be like I said earlier, like when short selling's banned, that kind of thing. That's kind of the beginning of the end, I think, when just the psyche breaks and people would actually listen to a lunatic like me, you know, for investment advice. That's when things are too far gone. As it is now, I'm just like way out in the fringes still.
Hmm. And you've noticed this trend when it's funny because I remember back in 2008 when I was involved in this, it was like a stock market game with Microsoft. It was the Microsoft Money Central site. And there was, I think, four professionals and one amateur. And we had to go, it was like a 13-week contest. And by the way, I won.
Yay.
I was up 14%. I was shorting everything left and right back then. And then I came out of it actually when the tide turned, I actually went long. So everybody's down 40%, 30%. I'm up 14 by the end. So that was great because that was, you know, the major collapse. But I remember very distinctly that they were sharing with us their page views and historic page views, and the page views during the market meltdown and the eyeballs, they called them back then, right? Unbelievable levels of interest in an investment site. You know, it's like anything else, right? You don't go to the doctor unless you have pain. Like, it's like, good.
No, that's, I mean, and that reminds me of another element here, kind of talking about just like general psyche, is even though I don't trade crypto, I haven't traded crypto since 2021. I think that crypto is an important element of this. So if we see Bitcoin just get hammered down really hard, I don't have a certain price in mind, but you know, at the moment, if you see it cut below
80,000.
Well, I would say 70,000 is crazy important support level psychologically and chartingly. If you see it break 70,000, I think you'll see equity bearishness really ramp up fast. So I don't know how far Bitcoin will go, but if Bitcoin just gets really hammered hard, that I think would be one element of like, okay, this is starting to get close to some kind of, medium term low at least. Let me just look at Bitcoin so I have some offering here. Yeah, I mean, if you saw Bitcoin crack, not even 70,000, I would say about 73,000. If we get down to, say, the high 50s, I think that would be an important medium-term low across all asset classes.
That's a long way from here. Long way.
Yeah.
So what this top that we finally achieved in the markets right now, that we had recently, there's a couple things. I mean, there was a couple blow-off moments in there.
Right.
But they were also just half-lunged blow-off moments, right? I mean, it's like kind of got there. And it's like, oh, it's good. But we had this, you know, through, I'll say, the end of the third quarter 2024 for the 2 years before that. There was just a nonstop, like, hey, let's get into stocks. It's the best thing again. We hated him for a year, but all things are going to be good. And the theme, the narrative, the cause was all because the Fed was going to reduce the stabilization of inflation coming down. You know, everything was good. And then the AI came upon us, and that, you know, drove things to the moon. And everybody's going to have NVIDIA. Everybody owned NVIDIA, but everybody's going to have NVIDIA chips, and AI was going to be the thing. And going on and on and on. Was that something that was there something there that we could have picked up on?
Well, I mean, I'm right here in the midst of it all in the Silicon Valley. And the atmosphere around here on the surface, you know, just as you walk the streets, hasn't really changed much. It's still kind of the same place I've always known. But I'm a chartist at heart, and I like to look at long-term charts and looking at just, you know, and there's always a way to talk yourselves out of it too, because like if a person is sort of possessed with like the dreadful debt the United States is in, you can turn right over to Japan and say, well, they got way worse than us and they're not exactly collapsing. So there's always kind of a way out when you have an argument. But anecdotally, you know, I've gotten very used to being the freak who everyone sort of teases, you know, friends and such about, oh, Tim the Perm Bear and all that, because, you know, people who really don't know left from right can basically, you know, and the exemplar of that is like Wall Street Bets, if you hang out on that side at all, you know, basically a bunch of youngsters borrowing student loans ostensibly or taking up personal loans and putting on crazy bets. And you're seeing like 20-year-olds destroy themselves financially. It's like, you know, you're bankrupt at 20. So there's been a lot of madness over the years. And I think the tippity top of the lunacy was like 2020/2021. And we've had kind of a echo of that in 2024. And so I think that it's going to be really a societal shock, because basically you've got an entire generation that has no clue what a bear market is. I mean, to them, a bear market is like a 5% diminishment in prices. But if you see like millions for a week.
People,
Yeah. Because, you know, there's always been someone to save the day. And for someone like me who profits from stocks going down, you know, I have to be completely gun shy because you never know when the next bailout and government program is going to be. But the dreadful thing is for us as a country is that there will come a time when it's like, there ain't no bailout left.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember so well in the midst of the COVID crash, when Trump was livid to Powell about, you know, not doing enough. And that Sunday, Powell traipses out this multi-trillion-dollar bailout, and Trump was giddy because like the YM was up quadruple digits and basically saved the day. So that, you know, there's bound to be other programs of some kind or another, or, you know, castigating short sellers, banning short selling, blaming us, et cetera. But there will come a time when it's been like, we don't have dick to bail anything out. Yeah, so well, God bless you and good luck.
As I always said, you know, the first bailout was, the government, they would send money. You know, then we had the Fed creating money from there. Who bails out the banks bailed out people, the government bailed out people, the Fed then bailed out. Who's left? Who's left in the lineup?
Ignorance is their best friend, because you and I could walk the streets of a sophisticated urban environment. We could walk in New York or Chicago or San Francisco, anything, and stop 100 people and say, just in a paragraph, could you tell me what the Federal Reserve is? And if 1% gave us a good, solid answer, I would be stunned. I'm not talking about going to like a cornfield. I'm talking about like, you know, supposed sophisticated people. So people have no idea how anything works. Therefore, they can get away with it. Yeah. All they care about is like, you know, save me.
Please. Let's talk about the fourth turning. You've mentioned this before, but I want to go through this again. This is kind of your go-to. Yeah. Tell me about it. Explain it, what it is, and let's go through that.
Right. Well, The Fourth Turning was a book written, I think the first came out, I want to say 99, and it essentially breaks up human history into a series of four cycles that traverse a typical human lifetime. So, you know, very crudely stated, like four 20-year cycles, more or less. And, you know, this probably comes from my desire to sort of make sense of the world. And so what they offer is kind of a roadmap of the past as well as the future. And, you know, it was written in 99, and I read this thing like, I don't know, 2010 or something like that. And I sort of kind of put it to the test because they were saying, we're entering the fourth turning now, and these are the kind of thing that's going to happen. And I was kind of stunned because they pretty much called COVID. They pretty much called the attack on the World Trade Center. They pretty much called the bailouts. I mean, there's all these like things you could tick off in terms of like, well, that really did happen. And this isn't like Nostradamus where you have to like twist yourself into a pretzel to kind of match one thing to another. It was quite specific. And I was pretty blown away by that. And just the book kind of sings to me in terms of its truthiness, is a George Bush phrase. And so what it calls for now is that we're deep into the fourth turning, which is kind of like the bad part. And the hopefulness of this is that, you know, if and when a given society emerges from the fourth turning, like, you know, at the end of the Revolutionary War, at the end of the Civil War, at the end of the Great Depression, things start to get good. And it's like real green shoots, not the nonsensical green shoots that they talked about in early 2009, but like, you know, there's been devastation, wipeout, but it's a cleansing. And, you know, if we lived in a better world, that cleansing would have taken place in 2008, but it didn't. It got forestalled. And so what it really speaks to is basically like an awful period, which, you know, we're right in the midst of it now. We've got all the right characters in place and the right actions in place. And, you know, if we can just get through this and deal with the pain, then the true healing begins and you're into the first turning again.
Well, which is all about the you know, eat your vegetables before you have dessert, right? Isn't that the same discussion?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and— they speak about the role of, you know, spirituality in the society and, ethics, respect, basically common decency, because we live in an increasingly indecent world right now. And, you know, I'm here in the midst of the very liberal Silicon Valley. And, you know, when I said Trump's going to win, they're like, no, don't say that. I won't say it, but it's true. It's going to happen. And, you know, these days I'm saying it's going to get a lot worse and they don't want to hear that either. So, like I say, I probably don't get invited to a lot of parties.
Last time on the show, we talked about how that you asked me to come and please grab you by the neck, kick you in the teeth when the markets looked like they were finally bottoming one day in the future. So that one day in the future, you can come out, switch teams and move some money to, we're not there yet, but move some money. Are we still on for that?
Well, you know what? It's funny because as much as I was harassing the crypto bros and so forth, I will say this. If we get really hammered and Bitcoin included really goes down, I'm sort of teetering and might put my toe in the old Bitcoin water because, you know, it's a hard thing because the kinds of people that have written books about this and are passionate about it, it's like, you know, he seems pretty smart. And I'm kind of teetering in that respect. So that might be a shift for me as it is now, because it is very tough to basically, you know, get short, enjoy the ride down, you know, double down and see your profits evaporate, you know, when it goes bouncing. So that's no fun. I've tried that before. So I don't think we're there at this time. I think we're in for quite a ride between now and probably the midterms of next year. I think we've got a very interesting 15 months ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still betting that they're going to back off on some of this stuff because some of it seemed extraordinarily harsh. And it was there to make a point that, hey, I'm the big guy. I can do this. I will do this. I'm not a wimp and don't test me. So if you, you know, if I'm not going to postpone anymore, because let's see what this happens. We'll have some pain in interimly, but you know, we need to kind of figure something out here, whatever exactly it is. That's the take tact I'm taking. That seems the most logical. However, that being said, I don't know if that's a good idea. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
what I mean by that is not being logical. I don't think I should be logical, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, when they do sort of cross their arms and say, no, we're serious, I'm kind of like cheering them on, like, please be bold, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Because, you know, one more chartish thing that I'll sort of toot the horn at, and I'm not an expert at all, is Elliott Wave. Because Elliott Wave, I found stinks during bull markets, but during bear markets, I found it to be really, really, really helpful. And this notion that we're in, you know, and this is not to be conflated with the fourth turning, even though there's a number involved. If we're in the third wave of this particular move, it's kind of a big deal because everybody expects these things to only happen like in October. But you know, so far the whole Elliott Wave bang out of what's been happening has been just spot on. So that's another sign to me that okay, this is really a bear market because it's acting like one.
Well, especially we saw the small caps already down 21% from top to bottom. That's bear market. Hello, right?
Right.
I mean, so we got that going on, and some of the people in the administration came out. Scott Bessent yesterday said, "Hey, you know," or 2 days ago, whatever it was, "Hey, this is more of a technical." Sell-off, the technology share sell-off rather than the market. I'm like, what? It has nothing. He said, he has nothing.
That's the exact kind of thing that I just stand up and cheer because, he's no dummy. I mean, this guy's a very successful hedge fund guy and so forth. He's the, treasury secretary. So he's no dummy. But, when I saw that, that's kind of initial reaction, which is very comforting because like it's sort of like, either throwing in front of a surprise party or trying to tiptoe around somebody, you just like, shh, don't let them, you don't want to get their attention. Just like, take it easy. And that's why if I had a market to choose from, I would vastly rather see a market which is like down 3 days of the week and up a little bit two for weeks and weeks and weeks, as opposed to like some monster crash. Because if you get a monster crash, they're going to pay attention and they're going to do something about it.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Crazy, crazy stuff. Tim Knight, Slope of Hope. We're going to have all the information on the show notes, episode number 915, over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks for joining me, as always, and we will spread this out so that maybe we'll have a little pickup and then a little bit of a turn the next time.
Okay, well, in 8 years when the market falls again, be sure to reach out.
I'll see you, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
And that is officially a wrap of this episode. Let's just hope that things calm down a little bit for the sake of all of our sanity over the next few weeks. Yeah, you can make some money on the short side, of course, as Tim has talked about in this show and in many shows in the past. But at the same time, we got to make sure that some of the 401k money that we have and all that is holding up well for our futures. But we will, because we made sure, as we know, to diversify, as we've talked about for the last 17 years on this show. The diversification, the flower garden that we talk about, how you want to make sure to not have all your eggs in one basket. You want to make sure when you're planting that flower garden, that you have other things inside just, perennials or just annuals or just evergreens. You want to have something in there that's going to be, doing well during certain seasons as other things may not. And we look at the flower garden where you have the heliconias and the roses and you have your impatiens and you have the evergreens and you have a small little azalea bush, all these things that are going to be in your portfolio are not going to do well all the time. But there's some things that should be shining brightly, whether it's a position in gold or bonds or alternatives, whatever it may be, that's what you want in your portfolio to really counter some of these kinds of conditions. Sure, over time, what's going to happen is that you're going to say, wow, the S&P is up 18%. I'm only up 14. Okay, fine. But you know what? When the S&P is down substantially and you have less than you would have to have comparatively in necessarily the investment that would be getting hit the hardest, you have other things that are actually in the green. Now that smooths out the return, gives you a better psychological ability to weather the storm instead of pulling out and panicking like we saw the panic selling of the end of last week. Now, there's some reason for that because there was a big event that happened, of course. But now what we want to do is we want to make sure that we are set, diversified in a way that we can weather the storm moving forward. Thanks for joining me this week. And coming up next week, Manuel Bly, then we have Brian Dress, Pat O'Hare from Briefing, Dan Pilla. We're talking about some taxes that we'll have to talk about starting out the next year of taxes, you know, after April. We'll talk about taxes as well. So keep a subscription going. Make sure to give a little rating over on the Apple or Amazon or Spotify, YouTube, wherever you can desire to listen to this. Thank you so much. We'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.